Welcome to Business Beat. Here each week, KBIA takes a look at the business and economic issues facing mid-Missouri. I'm Christopher Husted. Before Lewis and Clark came through here, a huge tree has been standing in central Missouri, growing to 90 feet tall. The beloved bur oak, which many call the big tree, has survived all kinds of punishments during her 350 years on the prairie. But as Harvest Public Media's Peggy Lowe reports, last year's record drought was especially hard on the big tree.
It sure doesn't feel like spring as John Sam Williamson meets up with a professor at the big tree. It's below freezing this morning, and the cold wind makes Williamson pull the bill down on his John Deere cap. He's the sixth generation to farm this land along the Missouri River, and the big tree has always helped the Williamson men tell time.
My dad used to tell the story that his dad, who died before I was born, said it was time to plant corn on our farm when the leaves on the bur oak tree were the size of a squirrel's ear.
Williamson is out here today with Chris Starbuck, a retired plant science professor with the University of Missouri. They do this every once in a while, checking in on the big tree in Boone County, outside Columbia. People have partied here, proposed marriage here, launched political campaigns here. It has been photographed more times than a beauty queen, and the web is littered with her pictures, many of them found on her Facebook page that has 7,200 fans.
The big tree is a place that we have felt connected to since the time that we've been living in Missouri.
That's Katie Laganis-Kinnett, who got her engagement photos taken under the tree last August, dancing with her now husband, Grant Kinnett.
There is just something majestic about how it stands alone out in the middle of a cornfield, and it's just so big and wide and sprawling.
But the big tree really suffered during last year's record-breaking drought. Her roots reaching down to 10 feet still couldn't get to the depleted water table here in the river bottoms. Starbuck says he was alarmed.
The leaves were kind of off color and a lot of wilting.
So Professor Starbuck called Williamson in August and told him he was going to have to do something for the first time in the 177 years the family has owned this land. The day after the call, Williamson hauled an 850-gallon tank down the road and watered the big tree.
That by the time the water all ran out, it had all soaked in the ground. There was no standing water anywhere. It just soaked it up like a sponge.
All told, Williamson figures he gave the big tree about 3,000 gallons of water. But when word got out via the local paper that the big tree was hurting, others brought more. Calls and emails with advice and offers of help came in from all over the country.
It's kind of like, to me, that tree is nothing, no different than a beached whale. You have a beached whale, what does the community do? They all come to its rescue.
That's Eric Kruger, who lives outside Houston, who, like many others, offered to send money to help the big tree. So how will it fare this next summer? Professor Starbuck says it's hard to say. Already the area is lacking several inches of rain, despite spring snowstorms. And he says the tree has been in decline since the flood of 1993, when she was covered in 8 feet of water. But both of the caretakers say they're not too worried about the big tree's future.
This tree is genetically superior. It wouldn't have lived this long. And it's also lucky. It's been through a lot. It's been through floods and droughts and lightning strikes and things, and it's still here. And I would predict, and I think Chris has said this too, it'll probably outlive all of us.
And just in case it doesn't, Williamson has an offspring of the big tree growing in his backyard. And as for the social life around the oak, there's already a wedding booked at the big tree this fall. Peggy Lowe, Harvest Public Media.
Hostess, Nordyne, Fuqua Building Systems, AP Green. The shutdown of all these plants signaled the loss of hundreds of jobs in Missouri. But imagine if it was just one powerhouse plant that really defined a city known for its innovation and production.
Dayton, Ohio has a big legacy of invention, from the car starter to the stepladder to the pop-top can to the cash register being invented here.
What about the airplane? Did you mention the airplane?
I did not mention the airplane.
Now imagine that plant closes.
How does a city of inventors reinvent itself, you know, in this new time?
Hi, I'm Julia Reichert.
Hi, I'm Steve Bognar.
And we're from Dayton, Ohio, so we are also Midwesterners.
Reichert and Bognar are documentary filmmakers. You might know them from their 2006 Emmy Award-winning documentary, A Lion in the House. One of their most recent documentaries, though, was The Last Truck. The film follows the shutdown of the General Motors plant in Dayton, Ohio, and the workers who were affected. It was that film that inspired them to take documentary to a whole different medium, the web.
The idea was kind of with us ever since we began meeting auto workers and realizing that their lives were all thousands of them, were all going to have to change.
Reichert and Bognar teamed up with their local public radio station, WYSO, and mapped out the mission of the Reinvention Project. Reinvention Stories is an experiment in bringing real-life documentary stories into the potential of an interactive environment. This includes short movies, photographs, and audio storytelling. You can sit back and let the majority of it autoplay for you, or you can choose your own adventure by just clicking around.
To my mind, it's kind of experimental. Like, I don't know of anything else like it, so it's hard to make a reference.
The site is a little different. Here's how it works. A short movie pops up when you access the site. You're introduced to a handful of characters in the context of their stories.
My name is Holly Todd.
I'm LaToya Coleman, and I live in Redmond.
Mitchell Wood.
Carol A. Coffee.
Some of them have been laid off. Some are starting new businesses. Some are dealing with family loss. But all of them are at a point in their life where they're reinventing themselves.
You know, people starting their lives over, either because they needed to, they had to, or because they decided to.
Each story presents a possible emotional connection for the audience, thanks to the diverse voices Reichert and Bognar found. The entire piece is arranged in three acts, where each person in the project tells their story by answering three questions.
Who was I? What happened? Who am I trying to become? These people are not like, you know, civic leaders or corporate titans or anything.
Ultimately, Reichert and Bognar want these stories to be relatable to any listener. Dayton really is an example of hundreds of communities across the U.S. dealing with a slowly recovering economy and a chance to decide what it wants to be now.
Even if things kind of crash for you or fall apart, you know, you can go at it again, you can try again, you can reach out for help, and you can restart your life. I think that's a lot what's going on in the country.
You know, we are believers in the power of story. For as long as people could tell stories, stories have helped us understand the world, help us understand like what we can get through, you know, how people get through hard times. And these stories are like that. These stories are hopefully roadmaps to help people get through hard times.
That's all for Business Beat this week. The Reinvention Stories Project can be found at reinventionstories.org. There is a heap of other components on the site I didn't get to in my story. Check it out. I'm Christopher Husted. Thanks for listening.